Yeah, okay. So yeah, thank you all for coming. This is our workshops. So the idea behind the workshops that we hold is to get an idea of the different organizations on the left, what they're doing and why they do it. So specifically, the question that we gave Donald to present on is, what do you do and why do you do it? In other words, what is the work of your organization, and why do you believe this to be politically necessary work, perhaps even the most politically necessary work in the present? So yeah, Donald will give a short presentation, and then we can open it up for a question and answer from the audience. Oh, sorry. Donald is a founding member of the Communist League Tampa and studies U.S. labor history. Communist League of Tampa are a group of internationalist communists in the Tampa area who are primarily educational, such as organizing reading groups, lectures, and a publication. They are primarily influenced by the politics of left communism, but take interest in various strains of syndicalism, anarchism, and neo-Kautskyanism, and aim to make communist politics relevant to the working class.
All right, I guess I'll just start talking about how our group came together in the first place. A lot of us basically just met through kind of random leftist things, and the core of the group, myself and my friend Jay, we met through Occupy, and we kind of realized we were amongst the only actual Marxists there, so we started talking. And some of us met through the IWW around maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I was a member of that, and I was a syndicalist at that point. And We started trying to form a project called the Tampa Solidarity Network. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with the whole concept of solidarity networks, but it's based off a group called Seattle Solidarity Network, which was, they've been around for a while, and they actually have had quite a bit of success with this model of organizing. But basically, it's just like an all-volunteer group that kind of picks up random tenant and workplace struggles and organizes actions to kind of win small demands. And the idea is, you know, if you focus on kind of winning small demands instead of trying to organize entire workplaces, you kind of build a kind of like a flying picket type structure, I guess is that kind of idea. You kind of, the idea is to, you know, make a mass of workers and, you know, students and whoever can get involved in whatever kind of actions are necessary. And we had one campaign with tenants. We had a mostly black neighborhood, and you know, you had this one really racist and horrible landlord, and she was refusing to fix people's stuff and just generally being a very nasty person. And so we organized with a lot of these, mostly just one of these tenants, and we had a picket, and we went around the landlord's neighborhood and put around flyers telling, you know, all our neighbors that she was a horrible person. And we were able to win that campaign and get her to cave in on our demands. But after that, it really didn't take off and go anywhere, because, you know, we would put up flyers around town and people would contact us, but they were kind of expecting like a legal aid type service and not, you know, a group of Reds who were trying to actually, you know, I guess use direct action or whatever you want to call it. And so we kind of tried to make that go somewhere, but it never really did go somewhere. So we kind of just, well, we stayed together as a group, like all of us who were involved were the most politically affiliated. And we did a reading group for Capital, because we all wanted to read Capital. And we went through volumes 1, 2, and 3, and that was good. We kind of got more people interested in Marxism, and that started out as just four people, but it kind of grew into a larger group. And we started just doing a weekly reading group, whoever was interested, and just discussing our politics, kind of discussing what the current conditions were and how we could maybe intervene if possible, based on our, you know, previous experiences organizing. And let's see. So our politics are, I would say, primarily influenced by left communism, which is, honestly, it's not the most well-known branch of Marxism, unfortunately, but it's basically like a tendency based off various opposition factions in the Comintern, who were very much intransigently for an independent class politics, and very much united around like anti-nationalism, you had multiple different factions of left communism, and we kind of draw from all the different ones, and we also we try to basically take from the best of both the Second and Third International and all the kind of different strains of Marxism afterwards. Like, some of us are more interested in, I guess, Johnson Forest tendency type stuff, like C.L.R. James and Rydyanovskaya. Some of us are more interested in like classic syndicalism. But generally, we all kind of agree on a general, I guess, what I would call a left communist platform. And we're all fans of Rosa Luxemburg, who wasn't a left communist, but was an influence on that current. And Anton Panikov would be another one. Amadeo Bordiga, who was the Italian left communist guy. He was more of a Leninist partyist. And you had people like Gavril Myasnikov, who was part of the Russian communist left. And we kind of take influence from all these figures, but we don't like hold to super dogmatic left communist lines. You have groups like the ICC, who are very much orthodox left communists, who are very, I would say, kind of dogmatic and kind of blind to how conditions have changed and aren't very effective. And there are other left communist groups around the world, and a lot of people have asked, well, why not join ICC or ICT is the other group? And I think one of the problems is a lot of these groups just aren't really in touch with the current conditions that we live in. I think ICT is a bit better than ICC, but they have practically no presence in America. So we basically kind of had to start fresh if we want to start, you know, a political tendency around these politics. And I guess I could read our points of unity just to kind of give an idea of what our basic platform is. And essentially, to be a member of our group, requirement is basically just to come to our reading groups for a little bit and discuss, you know, your politics. And if you decide that you're down for points of unity, then you pretty much can join. Like, we don't have a very strict membership process. And alright, so our first is, communism is a society about the state where money and markets have been abolished and production is collectively planned. It also abolishes divisions of nation, race, and gender that are products of our socialization into oppressive class society. Is not mere worker ownerships of factories or state-controlled resources, but a world where value, as we know it, has been abolished, and free access to goods has replaced markets and rationing. However, this society will not emerge through self-sufficient communes or an immediate change in the social order without transition. Capitalism is a product of history developed from previous social orders. Communism will be no different. We are internationalists. We oppose all forms of imperialism and refuse to side with our own nation-states in worldwide conflicts. In situations of imperialist war, the only sensible position to take can be revolutionary defeatism, pursue transforming imperialist war into a revolutionary civil war against world capitalism. We also reject all forms of nationalism as an obstacle to revolution and reject any political alliances with nationalists of all stripes. This includes rejecting socialism in one country or any other national road to socialism. Revolution must be international in scope or nothing. Also of great importance is upholding a pro-immigration stance and maintaining an uncompromising stance against all forms of xenophobia and national chauvinism. As communists, we offer a critique of existing relations that attacks the totality of social life, not merely the economy or state. we are not colorblind Marxists who ignore the real social realities of racism, which along with gender oppression must be actively fought against by revolutionary movements. The problem with post-structuralist identity politics is not addressing these issues, but failing to address their root causes, the material reproduction of society. We reject that the USSR and its various offshoots, such as the People's Republic of China and Cuba, are examples of socialist societies or functioning proletarian dictatorships, which serve as models for us to use. While no functioning communist society has existed, we point to the Paris Commune, the early days of the Russian Revolution, the German Revolution, the Shanghai Commune of 27, and aspects of the Spanish Civil War as historical moments where proletariat grappled with the task of forming a new society. As communists, we aim for the abolition of the state, but cannot deny that any collective project of changing the world means grappling with political power. This doesn't necessarily mean participating in elections aiming to capture the bourgeois state and utilize it to proletarian ends, an impossibility in this era, but rather developing an alternative to bourgeois politics. Ultimately, the proletariat must form its own political institution independent from other classes and develop the capacity to rule as a class and abolish capitalist relations. This is a dictatorship of the proletariat. Democracy is not a sacred principle, an ahistorical ideal to be realized, but rather an instrument to be utilized. Democratic forms of collective decision-making will certainly be utilized by the proletariat if it is to seize power, and important for maintaining its capacity to rule as a class. Democratic forms as such are not inherently revolutionary, nor are they a complete safeguard from the development of bureaucracy and internal counter-revolution. We reject united fronts of all bourgeois parties, including those belonging to the left wing of capital. While strategic work with the rank and file of certain organizations may be necessary and beneficial, actual political alliances with reformists or reactionary groups can only mean sacrificing our political independence. And our last is overall skepticism towards trade unionism as a vehicle for revolutionary change. While we are not opposed to workers organizing with unions for security and benefits, we recognize the need for rank and file organization autonomous from the conservative leadership of the union bureaucracy. And we've actually gotten some crap for our position on unions from other left communists, saying that we're not hardline enough on unions, and our position is kind of ambiguous because we say we're just skeptical. But I think our general position is that we don't believe in trying to capture trade unions through kind of, you know, trying to win positions in the leadership, but we want to form rank and file organizations that can, you know, fight for the interests of the rank and file. And weekly activities are, we meet every week and we have a weekly reading group that usually, you know, goes on to discuss many other things in the reading. We, you know, we generally discuss, you know, what we read, the kind of stuff we read is, you know, we started with Capital, then we did Guy's Dobbs' book on the German Revolution, which was pretty informative. And we kind of ran through all the orthodox Marxist stuff. Like, we read Kautsky's Erfurt Program, we read Reform and Revolution, we read Lenin, we read all the classic left communist stuff like Wordiga, Pankook, and we read Hobsbawm recently, we read Revolutionary Strategy by McNair. Last thing we did was a Warren Goldner article on kind of the history of the American working class. So we're trying to shift our focus of our reading group more towards actually just studying like American working class history and trying to use that to kind of understand their current conditions. And we also do we just started doing a movie club basically where we show public films, and it's kind of our way of trying to get more people who might not be down for a reading group, but, you know, are generally interested to get in contact with us. And we're doing a Battle of Algiers on Monday. We're going to try to do a kind of a discussion on national liberation and the strengths and weaknesses of it in its historical role. And we also are going to do there's a Fight for 15 campaign in Tampa, so we're going to participate in the rally that they're holding and try to engage with people who are involved in that. We wrote up a little pamphlet kind of outlining our position on the SEIU and what we think, you know, could be a ways to kind of push the struggle forward and beyond kind of a constricting role that the SEIU has played in these campaigns lately. And our long-term plans are basically, we want to form eventually a national organization structured around our points of unity. But we want to kind of expand, and we were willing to develop our points of unity to kind of bring more groups in. We're in close contact with some comrades in Miami who are trying to form a chapter. And if that takes off, we're probably going to maybe form just like a Florida-wide organization. And there's kind of scattered sympathizers around the country that we're in contact with. And we've been trying to push them to form local groups and start developing chapters. And we've been criticized for having for this approach and trying to form an organization for being federalist and a localist. But I think it's really the only way to go, because if we were just to basically form our group here in Tampa and then try to impose our line on anyone else who wanted to join and not kind of develop a real base, then I just wouldn't see the point in having a national organization. Like, you need to have real people on the ground organizing, and in organizations, and not just like a bunch of scattered people around the country who talk online. But we have there's people over on the West Coast in the Bay Area that are trying to form a group, and we're in close contact with them. And there's people in New York City we're in contact with, and there's people in Ohio we're actually in contact with. But we would like to work towards forming a national organization based around our politics, and then, even in the long run, trying to cooperate internationally, which is, very difficult these days. But I think, this is a long-term plan, Our group is basically structured. We have there's basically two people who are the editors of our publication. So I'd basically say that we are the leaders of the group, because we interpret the political line and determine what gets published in the newsletter or whatever. But otherwise, we pretty much do decisions. If we don't all agree on the decision, we just do it by majority vote. So I guess we would say default would be, I don't want to say consensus, because that kind of has a negative association with Occupy. But there's no point in doing a vote if everyone generally agrees on something. So this is kind of we don't have a group constitution or anything like that yet, just because we haven't really needed one yet. It's very loose, I guess, at this point, because we only have around 10 members. But basically, anyone who meets us and comes to our reading groups and wants to get involved and likes our politics, and we feel we're on the same level as them, then they agree with our points of unity, then they're welcome to join. There's no really hardcore commitment for people who want to join, So we have around, I'd say at least 10 members, at least 10 members. I guess there are political differences within our group. Like, our idea is, we all agree on the points of unity, but as far as theoretical differences go, we have a lot of diversity within the group. And our whole thing is, we think that group should be united just around politics and not necessarily a very exact theoretical vision. As you have groups like the ICC, for example, another left communist group, their whole thing is united around this kind of concept of decadence theory. And or you have the Cliffites, who unite around the state capitalism theory. And for us, it's really not, these kind of theoretical issues are really not, they're important, they need to be discussed, but really what matters is the kind of political conclusions that people reach from them. So if someone has a different theory on what the USSR was, and we all actually do have different theories on the USSR, but we all generally come to the same political conclusion that it's not a model that we want to follow. It wasn't, it's not, an example of a real proletarian dictatorship as we would want it. Some of us are some of us believe in state capitalist theory. Some of us are, I'm personally fond of Tickton's work. One of us is a fan of the kind of the bureaucratic socialism line. And we also kind of have a more syndicalist faction, I would say. Like some of the members of our group are more fond of syndicalism, and I guess we would not be as harsh on, you know, syndicalism as some of us would be. Like, I personally am very skeptical on syndicalism as a form of organization, as a strategy, but I'm still open to the possibility that, you know, it could be a part of a modern day revolutionary movement. Like, some of us are members of the IWW and do work with them, and we kind of decided, you know, there is a left wing of the IWW and a right wing, and the left wing, you know, we could work with and try to, you know, make alliances with and try to build an organization with them. But I guess you said there's a more syndicalist faction, there's a more partyist faction. Like, some of us would want to focus more on organizing at the point of production and kind of building an organization from there. Whereas, you know, myself personally, I think I would describe myself as more of a partyist, I guess. Like, I think, you know, we would focus more on building a political, you know, building organizations based on political affinity. But I guess, why is our work necessary? Well, you know, it really isn't much as far as communism goes in Tampa. We have a Freedom Road Socialist Organization chapter, and they're pretty much horrid Stalinists, and they kind of dominate, like, the student organizing. They have a couple front groups. They have SDS. And they organized through them. And they were actually my introduction to the organized Marxist left. And actually, they kind of scared me off from
SDS?
Yeah. They're basically completely a Frizzo front group. But I think you have a socialist alternative there, but they only have like two members, and I don't really think they do much. So really, you know, it really isn't much as far as the Marxist left goes in Tampa. So there's definitely a room for organizing. In general, you know, it's generally a pretty conservative town, though. Like, Tampa used to be one of the most radical cities in the United States, actually. Like, Ybor City, which is like a district in Tampa, you had like cigar factories and a lot of very militant strikes there. The CP USA was heavily involved. The IWW was there. When Eugene Debs ran for president from jail, it was one of the only districts that voted for him completely, actually. You had, like, the anarchist Malatesta once came and spoke in Ybor City, and it was, you know, there was a big building, and it was completely full, and you had people standing outside just so they can hear him talk. So there actually is a very rich working class history in Tampa, but today it's very much, pretty much been gutted out, I hate to say, you know. But I guess that's one thing our group would like to do, is show people this history and kind of, you know, bring it back into focus. That would kind of be another project that we would like to embark on. But I guess in a broader sense, I think our work is necessary because there's a necessity to merge. I would say is to merge socialism with the labor movement. You know, there's a necessity to kind of, I think, you know, organized communists have a need to intervene in wider class movements and bring our politics to people. I think a lot of people in the left communist tendency kind of think that, you know, people will kind of just spontaneously become, that workers will just kind of spontaneously become communist and seize the means of production just when a crisis gets intense enough or whatever. And we generally completely reject this position. We think that it's necessary to, you know, to merge socialism and the workers' movement. That, you know, people aren't going to naturally, essentially, be communists. And organized communists need to, you know, bring their ideas out there. We need to organize, educate, and agitate. And I guess right now our focus is education. You know, we think that you do need to have organizations that educate, not just kind of show up at strikes and call for a general strike or whatever and kind of just agitate. You know, you need to agitate, but really you need to have, you know, education as well. You need to make Marxism relevant to people and educate people in Marxism. And we found that there actually is quite a bit of interest in Marxism today. I think, you know, the younger generation is, you know, they still kind of exist under the cloud of the Cold War, but in general, people, I think, are becoming more open-minded about, you know, Marxist and radical politics. And so, you know, there is, we have found quite a few people who are interested. You know, surprisingly, like, you know, most, you'd think that most people would, you know, be horrified at the word communist in Tampa, because, you know, it's, Tampa has a very large Cuban community, and so you have a lot of Cuban expats there who are very much anti-socialist. But we've actually met a lot of Cubans who are very much down with what we're doing and really like our politics. So, you know, the kind of stereotype that, you know, all Cubans, you know, are reactionaries, and this isn't really true. And our organization in Miami is actually, the two people who are spearheading it both grew up in Cuba, actually. So I guess I'd say that, you know, we aren't necessarily a communist organization, but an organization of communists. And I would say the difference is an organization of communists isn't necessarily engaged in mass organizing. You know, we're not a mass party. We're not, you know, involved in constant campaigns and constant organizing. We're not really, you know, fused with the broader class movement, but we're simply an organization of communists who are forming our groups as communists and want to merge those politics with the broader class movement. And I guess that's kind of what we're trying to do with the Fight for 15 campaign. There's a big rally in Tampa, and we're going to intervene, I guess. Or, I don't know. Intervene sounds kind of maybe a little too goofy, but we're just going to go and engage people with our politics and kind of talk to the workers there and talk about their experiences with the SAIU and maybe suggest ways forward. And I guess I'll just open the floor for discussion.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll start with Pam.
Well, so earlier you said that you don't have to agree in theoretical points, but you rather agree politically.
Yes.
But then you talked about there's not really an agreement on a program, meaning like a plan of political action, since there are some members like yourself who are opting for more of a party formation, and then there are others who want to work with unions and are more syndicalist types. And but what you just said in closing, how, you know, you do need to organize, educate, and agitate, but that today your focus is more on an educational activity to make Marxism relevant to people.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be, not to be obscure, but like that is also like a theoretical perspective about the nature of the present and what's necessary. It seems to me it's like you're making a judgment on what's needed. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that part, because it seems like a very natural response to the absence of like conversations about communism in your town. But so yeah, this whole like theoretical, you know, agreement versus political agreement, and how that gets parsed out in your organization.
Well, I mean, like, for example, like, you know, we've all had kind of arguments about the specifics of Das Kapital, whether or not, you know, the value form is historically specific to capitalism or is a, you know, kind of exist in other commodity-based societies or whatever. Like, we've argued about that. We've argued about kind of, there's all kinds of obscure theoretical points that people can argue about. And, you know, a lot of groups today split over these kind of things, you know. And I think We don't want that to happen. We don't want to kind of split over kind of these little theoretical issues. But I mean, you are right that there is kind of a theoretical perspective as far as where we've come from in viewing our necessity of organizing today. But I think, you know, I think, like what you said, this is more of just a natural response, I guess, to the current conditions. Like, it just seems obvious to us that we need to form, you know, politically based organizations as communists and bring our politics to the class. But on the split between the syndicalists and the partyists, I would say the syndicalists aren't necessarily, the more syndicalist factions aren't necessarily against, you know, political programmatic organization. They just think that, you know, a more, I guess what you call like red unions could be, you know, a more advisable strategy, I guess, forming like revolutionary syndicalist movements and work unions in workplaces and whatnot. And like I said, my objection to this is I just don't know how possible it is today. I think we need to kind of look for forms of worker organization that aren't, you know, based on the traditional union form, I guess. And I think, you know, the divide between the more syndicalist and the more partyist faction actually could be bridged if we kind of, I think a lot of the difference is over kind of terminology as well. But, I mean, I guess you are right that it is kind of a theoretical perspective, but we kind of came to this perspective over like a long course of doing reading groups and having political discussions together. And, I mean, overall, I think we're all, as long as we're on the same page politically and these theoretical differences don't translate to major political differences, I think it's all good.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your actual educational activities. So you spoke about how in the past when people in your group were in the TIFA Solidarity Network and you were doing outreach to people, they were kind of like using you like a service because of dire conditions. But it seems like now your group goes to various like protests or is going to go to the 5 for 15 protests. What do you do to kind of get people at these types of programs or like protests involved with your group, and how do you kind of bring them up to speed with this like leftist history that you're talking about so they can participate either in the reading group or like participate in the conversation that you're having? Like, how do you go from someone that's at a fight for 15 protest to like someone participating in your reading group and like feeling like they understand the stakes of what's going on?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we do have a few sympathizers who are kind of new to Marxism and still getting up to speed with our politics and just kind of learning what we're all about. But I guess our movie group is kind of one attempt at maybe making like a more accessible introduction. Like, we try to, like, you know, have political discussions based on that. And we're going to start doing public lectures that are more accessible, I guess, for people who are new to Marxism. Like, I'm going to do one on just like the basic history of the 20th century, like revolutions. And one of us is going to do like a seminar just on like the basics of Marxist political economy, like surplus value. What is, you know, profit? What is surplus value? You know, what is, you know, crisis and capitalism? And so, I mean, I guess that would be my answer. Like, we're basically going to start doing more accessible public lectures. And I guess, you know, I don't want to say just meeting people where they're at, because I have a bad association with that because of like all the Maoists that I've had to deal with. You're always talking about the mass line and meeting people where they're at. But I think you do kind of have to try to relate these issues to the daily bread and butter needs of workers. And that can be extremely difficult. And with our 5 for 15, we really have been, you know, trying to figure out how do we engage with people without, you know, coming off as too separate from real conditions, from utopians. How can we relate our politics, you know, to what's currently going on? But
quick question, but who's attending your screenings?
Just people in the neighborhood, basically. Like, we meet at a public space that's like owned by a bunch of Christian anarchists, and they do a lot of like community organizing work and stuff. And there's, you know, a lot of people who are involved in that, and they come to our screenings, and We advertise online, I guess, and we've only actually had one movie night so far, and had a pretty good turnout. But it's basically just anyone who wants to come in the neighborhood. It was it's just
Algiers.
Escaping my memory right
that's
now.
That's the next one, right? You're gonna do
the
one?
Next one is a Battle of Algiers.
Spencer?
Maybe you already said this before I came. I'm sorry for coming late. But as you became interested in Marxism and out of your reading groups, decided that you wanted to become political, to what extent did you consider joining an existing Marxist organization? And even if they weren't in Tampa, why not affiliate with them? National organizations. What was your thought process in eliminating that?
I think, in the United States, there really aren't a lot of Marxist organizations that are very active and large that kind of have politics similar to us. Like, I think today there's two kind of left communist organizations. There's the ICC, International Communist Current, and the ICT, and they're both supposedly international groups, but I don't know how large they actually are on an international basis. And I think ICT only has one member in the entire United States. And I think, I don't know how many ICC has in the United States, if any, but we generally like found their politics a little too wacky and just out of touch with reality. And I guess one of the reasons we didn't join an existing group is we just kind of feel there's a need for like fresh, new politics, I guess. Like there's kind of a need to start fresh and just rebuild from scratch in the current situation. And there's also a group called Unity and Struggle in the United States that kind of have left communist-esque politics. They're also really into like C.R. James and Johnson Forest tendency type stuff. But we didn't join with them just because we felt it made more sense just to start a local organization of our own based on our own experiences, and then from there maybe try to merge with these other groups in the United States, I guess. And like I said, we kind of were accused of having like a federalist, localist approach with this and like being crypto-anarchists, but like, I think if you want to have a national organization, you have to have, you know, real locals on the ground that have, you know, that are built up and have people in them. And until then, you know, we're still just going to be like a bunch of scattered individuals in contact with each other, I think. But I guess so. My answer would be there really aren't any groups in the United States that had, you know, politics that we felt like close enough in the opinion to.
Okay. Yes.
Do you have an ideal member, and if you do, who would be the ideal member? Potential member.
I mean, is anyone who is anyone who's down to, you know, organize and learn more about Marxism, I guess, you know. I would like to, you know, to bring in more people who are completely new to this stuff and educate them in that, but and also, like, our website so far, you know, we don't really have that. I would like to, you know, have more people who are active writers for our website and kind of start developing more of an actual, like, you know, an actual publication. So I guess, another type of ideal member would be, you know, just people who are very, like, well-educated in Marxism and good at writers who can, you know, write good content for our website and put out good, you know, modern analysis. And I guess part of our self-education is kind of building ourselves up to that level where we can actually be, have effective analysis and, you know, actually truly, like, apply Marxist theory to our conditions.
Yes.
Yeah. My question is about how your organization would define the term rank and file, because you said on the one hand you reject the idea that things just sort of happen spontaneously. And on the other hand, this was kind of your criticism of unions, is that, you know, they're not necessarily like rank and file driven organizations. And I guess I'm wondering specifically in connection to like the organizing that you talked about with, around the landlord, where if I understood correctly, it sounded like you were mainly working with like one tenant. So,
yeah.
I mean, that sounded like very commendable organizing, but I could see somebody saying, and I wouldn't say this, but I could see somebody saying, well, that really wasn't like a rank and file tenants movement, right? You were like, to use
yeah.
a very conservative expression, you were sort of like outside agitators. So I'm just wondering, like, what makes something rank and file? What's the sort of line that something has to cross before it's like not rank and file? Like, is it when people start to get paid to do something? Is it when a hierarchy is just like too large and complicated? Like, what exactly makes something rank and file or not?
Well, I think I would use the example of the SEIU in the current Fight for 15 campaign. There is, there is a union bureaucracy in the SEIU that is connected to the Democratic Party, and they have, they have had a very conservative influence on the struggle. Like, I think in Atlanta, there was an attempt to kind of merge it with the Ferguson movement, and a lot of the SEIU leaders were like, no, we can't get involved in that. It's too, this movement's too like violent or whatever, too radical. And so they kind of stopped that from happening. But I guess, my position would be that, there is a union bureaucracy in most of the existing official unions that is kind of a conservative influence on the actual workers' struggle. And our position would be that, we want to push for, we want to push for these struggles in these unions to kind of go beyond the unions themselves eventually. But we want to kind of push for, I guess, like autonomous strike committees that aren't controlled by the highly paid bureaucracy. And but at the same time, like, my personal position is that, unions, the form of the union itself has limitations and it needs to be moved beyond, some of us would say that the problem is more so the leadership of the unions, that it's controlled by bureaucracies, and that a more genuine kind of syndicalist movement based on kind of direct democratic rank and file control is possible. But I think, if you have a union and if you're effective at winning higher wages and get to a certain size, a bureaucracy is inevitably going to develop. And so I think our key position is just pushing for a class struggle to go beyond the confines of the unions.
On the organization question, you referenced Lauren Golder and Insurgent Notes. So how would you see what Insurgent Notes is doing compared to, I know they're mainly a publication, but
yeah.
They do identify in some sense with Left Coming as a real day or...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so how would you compare them to?
We all read Insurgent Notes and we're fans of Lauren Goldner. Well, we read his stuff for our reading groups. And I actually haven't sent them an email yet, so I would like to get in contact with them and kind of see what they've been doing. But I would consider them allies, They're primarily based in New York City, and I think they are mostly a local organization based out of there. And I don't think they have much of a drive for organizing and stuff like that. They're mostly a publication, I think. But yeah, I would like to get in contact with them and talk to them and see what kind of stuff they do beyond just doing their publication, which we all read and like a lot.
Okay, Lauren. You were talking about the history that you read about.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the early days of the Russian Revolution. So could you tell us a little bit about how your group interprets this historical moment to the left?
I regard what is our position on the Russian Revolution, or is that what you're asking? All right.
What do you educate your members about? Yes.
Well, I think we all kind of have differing positions, but we do have a general stance about the Russian Revolution that we would say that the seizure of power in October 1917, was a legitimate seizure of power by the proletariat, but we also believe that, the revolution did degenerate. We are firmly anti-Stalinist. But the question is, at what point was it beyond saving? And as a group, we actually have kind of mixed views on Lenin. Like me, I personally like Lenin a lot. You know, I read his stuff a lot. I have a lot of problems with Lenin myself, but I don't dismiss him completely. I don't think he's this evil dictator like some people would say. But some of us are, you know, less enthusiastic about Lenin, but we all generally agree that the Russian Revolution was like a genuine proletarian movement. But my personal position is that, you know, by 1920, it was pretty much going downhill, and that, you know, the Bolshevik Party had essentially become bureaucratized and kind of separate from the working class, and that, you know, I'm not going to say that Lenin and Stalin are one and the same, but you can see the seeds of Stalinism developing as early as in the Civil War period itself. You know, I think a lot of the things that, you know, the Bolsheviks did in the Civil War could probably be justified, you know, as necessities of Civil War, but after the Civil War, you know, it was necessary to kind of bring back the Soviet democracy, I think banning factions in the party was a huge mistake. I think that essentially the generation of revolution began before Stalin. It wasn't, you can't just blame it all on Stalin. And I think generally our group agrees on that. But like I said, some of us are less enthusiastic about Lenin than others. But
I guess I'm asking, sorry, just to like finish my thought, because earlier when Spencer asked you about, you know, why did you join an already existing organization, and then you said we needed to start from scratch. But like a lot of what you're saying seems to me to be about digesting and understanding a history of the left for your own group.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, is any left organization really starting from scratch? I mean, how can you if you're calling yourself a Marxist? And so I guess I'm still then asking myself, like Spencer's question, like there are already organizations around the world that call themselves, you know, or that work with like left communists, and you all seem to be a little flexible at least, and you know. So I'm just wondering about the emphasis of like starting something absolutely new, and what's the necessity of starting like a new organization as opposed to joining an already established one?
Well, I mean, let me think about this for a second. I mean, the problem is, you know, the existing left communist groups are just, there's a lot of problems with them. Like, I think ICT are a bit more down to earth than ICC, but they only have, like, one member in the United States, and we want flexibility, I guess, and joining a group with a central committee right now that already has a pre-established political line, I think, would kind of limit our ability to kind of create a fresh analysis. And I think a lot of the modern left, like the leadership of a lot of these groups, is essentially older people who grew up in the new left in that generation of movements.
Mm-hmm.
And their political, the way they think about politics and the way they operate is very much informed by those circumstances. And so I think there is actually a necessity to bring a more young people into these organizations and kind of create like a fresh, young generation of communists. Which isn't to say that we don't believe in, you know, working with older comrades and learning from their experiences, but we do think that there's a necessity to kind of, you know, to bring more young people in, I guess, and kind of have organizations that are more controlled, not by, you know, the older generation of new leftists, but by people who are growing up in these current circumstances, I guess. And, I mean, we would like to merge with other organizations in the United States that are more locally based, because there are other groups in the United States, like Insurgent Notes, like Unity and Struggle would be another one.
What about the CPUSA?
I mean, CPUSA are very much, I would call them a reformist group right now. I would say that they are currently like a reformist organization, and actually talked with their president recently. I don't know if he's maybe secretary, and their line is basically we need like a cross-class alliance to unite with the Democrats against the ultra-right. And that has nothing in common with our group's politics, I'd say. Like, I mean, there is a CPUSA chapter in Florida, and we have tried to talk to some of our younger rank and file members, but they pretty much, like, one of them got really mad at me because I said that China was one of the most effective exploiters of workers around the world. I guess, I don't know. Like, they're kind of tanky in their politics, so I guess the younger members would be.
But the comrade does make a very interesting, or raise a very interesting question, especially amongst working class people who have very little, if any, exposure to traditional communist interpretations of history. So when somebody says, oh yeah, the Russian Revolution, you're talking to a you know, a young African-American kid who works at Walmart, or a Latino or Latina who's working at a McDonald's, and all of a sudden they're talking about, they want to know about the Russian Revolution, you know? And then what would be the task of an organization to be able to begin to bring this person into an understanding? And I think some of the problem with the left is we use a lot of jargonistic terms. Terminology is really heavy. I say this because one of my exposures to a lot of the left groups in the city of Chicago has been very difficult for me as somebody who is not college educated, who does work, you know, in retail, minimum wage worker, and you know, so I can understand some of the jargon. But when I have friends of mine that, for example, where I work at, and I once joked about unionizing where we work at, and the reaction was unbelievable. It was like, God, we're not a bunch of commies, and it was this really negative reaction. And so how do you begin to sort of, even though we're all really, pardon my French, we're all fucked at that place, right? And there was this really amazing, like, there was this understanding that we're all being divided and played against each other by the management. Mm-hmm. But the idea to say, well, we can all, you know, unite together to do something positive for ourselves was just not, it was untenable. And maybe it's my fault too, because I'm not a trained organizer and I'm not a member of a union or anything. But the comment member makes a very good point. If someone who is young or even not so young, such as myself, and approaches either an already established left organization or a young organization such as yours, what will be the kind of education process? What are the kind of the education? Do you just say, here's a list of books you should read, and then come back and talk to us after you've done reading State and Revolution and the Communist Manifesto and, you know, whatever? I mean, what how do you tackle that issue of meeting people that are either young or older who may have very little or no experience whatsoever from of leftist politics?
I mean, it's definitely a very difficult task, you know. And I guess that would be one reason our group puts so much emphasis on education, because we do think that it's going to take a long, protracted process of education to kind of combat these, you know, the anti-communism that's so popular today. And I think, you know, you just have to be patient with people. You have to explain, you know, you have to, like, try not to be overly jargony, I guess, and just explain, you know, what the Russian Revolution was, what communism really is, you know, why we don't stand for, you know, Stalinism. Explain the difference between, you know, our vision of communism and what Stalinism became. And, or trying to, you know, really, I guess the key would be to kind of, you know, make communist politics relevant today. You know, what's going on in current events and, or in your workplace or whatever, that, you know, is relevant to communism. And so I guess that would be one tactic, I guess. But, I mean, if anyone has ideas on how we could, you know, educate people more effectively, I'm all up for it, you know.
We're going to do Watson first, and then I'll get to the second.
So, Mike, when you, in your points of unity, you mentioned these three or four historical moments as hairbringers of sort of future revolution: the Paris Commune, Shanghai, German Revolution, Russian Revolution, and Spain in the 1930s. But these all seem to me to be, even if you ignore all revolutions, they have very different political backgrounds leading up to them, mm-hmm. and very different kinds of actors. What would you say is your sort of model for the sort of organization you want to form? Do you have one, or is there a reason why are there models that you specifically don't want to be?
I mean, I would not like our group to basically be, you know, a bunch of people trying to live action roleplay the Bolsheviks, you know.
Cosplay roles.
Yeah, you know, we have a critique of what we call LARPing, which is that much of the left is essentially live action role playing, you know, when people dress up as, you know, knights and they get together and they pretend to fight each other. And
oh my God.
A lot of the left is like that, in our opinion. You know, there's a tendency to kind of look to these older movements and just try to copy them and recreate them. But, you know, I think if we were to look at, you know, organizations in the past that we are kind of influenced by, I think there's the KAPD, which was the Left Communist Party in Germany. I think it's kind of something we look towards as a way of kind of bridging the gap between the more syndicalist faction and the more partyist faction, because they kind of had this idea of political organization, but was still like engaged in building workplace committees and stuff like that. So I guess that would be one kind of influence. I guess we kind of look to like maybe the Italian Communist Party under Bordiga would be another kind of influence for us. I actually think that the history of anarchism, there are a lot of organizational models in that history that we can learn from. Like you had, for example, in Argentina, the FORA was one organization that kind of tried to bridge the gap between the economic and the political and kind of form like a unitary organization. I think that would be, you know, something to look at. But to be honest, you know, we don't really have like a specific model that we try to follow. You know, we're kind of trying to look at, you know, what in the past worked, what didn't work, and learn from that, but, you know, still be open-minded to new forms of organization. And
so how do you currently recruit members, and how do you plan on recruiting members in the years to come? I'm asking it mostly because I'm from Florida, and my high school experience was extremely oppressive, and I just wanted to get out of Florida as soon as possible. And I know, like, I mean, even, like, the most, like, quote-unquote liberal, like, teachers I had, like, for, like, economics or government classes, like, were still very much focused on, like, the bipartisan model and would never really branch out and talk about, like, communism. Like, some of them would go as far as say, like, oh, like, communism's not necessarily bad, but it's, so, like, how do you plan on, like, you know, do you go to high schools, do you, like, try to recruit, like, members even younger than, like, the college level, or, like?
We would like to be honest. We've been thinking about, there's a community college, Hillsborough Community College, not far away from where we meet in Ybor City. Oh. So we're going to probably go pamphlet there and try to talk to people.
Yeah.
And, I think, you know, high school students would probably also be down. But I think there's, you know, a lot of potential in high school students to even get involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, we're actually talking about this, like, what can we do to actually make a focused effort at recruiting? Because we really haven't made a focused effort at recruiting yet. Like, most of the people in our group we met through other leftist things, and we kind of, met through various leftist events or we met each other at school or at work or whatever. So, I mean, it's pretty much at this point our form of recruiting is just, you know, finding people we know that might be interested in communism or convincing them to come to our reading group and meet us and kind of see what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a focused recruiting strategy. We're still kind of developing, like, what kind of strategy for actually recruiting people would work.
Yeah, a couple comments on that occurred to me. One is that there is a tension between syndicalism and party building.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the syndicalist movement was the source of a lot of the best of the early Comintern, because a lot of the best of the Wobblies, for example, in the U.S., signed up for the CP once they could see the success of the Russian Revolution. It would be, it's nice that the syndicalists in your group are recognized that the Russian Revolution was a big step forward and a progressive thing, but it certainly took place because there was an organized party formation,
mm-hmm,
that set a time and a date and made, you know, alliances with other groups, but it was didn't at all take place due to syndicalist activity. And the the policy that the Comintern developed, based on their experience of Bolsheviks previously, was that unions should be all-inclusive. Everyone that works for and is exploited by a particular boss should belong to the same union. So like on a campus, it should be janitors and profs and everybody in between, et cetera, et cetera. That's industrial unionism. Mm-hmm. And that's not the same as revolutionary syndicalism,
yeah.
which believes that only people that agree with me on the Russian Revolution or on the Spanish Civil War or whatever, there's a tendency in that direction. There's a certain tension there. And the Comintern recommended, and in the U.S. there was actually quite successful, TUEL, Trade Union Educational League, a kind of ginger group within the unions
mm-hmm.
that would represent revolutionary consciousness and would participate in the ongoing activity of the union, but recruit people where as possible, spread the influence. And that, I think, is a very sensible model. I think
yeah.
that syndicalism is not a very sensible model, and I gather you have sort of the same inclination. I suggest, though, that you don't really have a group until you've worked that particular
contradiction
out.
We're still working through that issue, I think. And I think a lot of the confusion is defining syndicalism and defining the union, I guess. And that's kind of been one of the arguments is, like, a couple people in our group kind of think that, you know, any instance of workers taking action in the workplace is a union. And, you know, I think a union is more than that. It's you know, it's a formalized organization at the point of production that bargains for higher wages. And I think the strategy you mentioned, you know, forming rank and file organizations within the unions that are educational and kind of push struggles further is the model that I argue for. And I think the more syndicalist action in the group is starting to come to that line. But another problem is in the South in general, and in Florida especially, there really aren't a lot of unions, and unions are very weak. And so the question is, you know, if unions are hardly in existence, you know, how do you relate to workplace struggles? And I guess really what the more syndicalist faction of our group would say is that we need to have more of a focus on workplace struggles and forming workplace organizations. And how this will work in a state where you hardly have any unions at all is, you know, a very difficult question. And there is still a strategic debate going on about this within the group. But
I think, if I could just follow up, I think obviously in the United States right now it's a very difficult prospect to organize a union anywhere. And there's a lot of money, as everyone knows, being invested, billions of dollars in thwarting unions. The one thing which I would want to clarify about the Comintern policy and the TUEL was that it was a programmatically based formation. It had a 10-point program, 12-point program, up to and including the defense of the Russian Revolution and the necessity for American workers to emulate Russian workers and create their own workers' government
mm-hmm.
in a society in which the working class ruled. So it wasn't a rank-and-file formation for more democracy and for higher wages, et cetera. It was pretty explicitly linked to the Communist Party and was prepared to struggle for those ideas. I also wanted, though, to comment, and I just want you to think about this, because the Russian Revolution is such a critical issue. And I'm pleased that you recognize that represented the working class taking power. I think it did. And what's significant about it is that it represented the working class successfully holding power. Through the process of the Civil War, you know, 12 capitalist imperialist countries were sent expeditions to try to suppress it. There was a huge civil war. By 1920, the working class essentially didn't exist anymore. The best of the workers, I mean, there were millions killed, and all of course, the most class-conscious workers, or a very high percentage of them, became casualties in winning that civil war and in defeating world imperialism. The problem, essentially, as the Bolsheviks understood it, and I think if you look into this, you'll find that this is true, was that they understood. Lenin, in fact, according to Krupskaya, his wife's memoirs, he said to her that at one point, I think it was 1921 or something, he said, if we don't break out of Russia, if the world revolution is not successful, if we don't get through to Germany in particular, which is what they were mainly looking at, but go beyond, in 5 years, we'll either be dead or in jail. And he didn't mean that he would die of a heart attack. He meant that one way or another, it would be a Stalin or it would be a Kornilov
yes.
would be executing. Now, that's a critical thing to understand, I think, and that's what the whole gamble was posited on. And that's why Stalinism is such a profound revision.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, we have to make, in this overwhelmingly peasant country where most people believe in God and can't read and write, we have to make fully developed socialism that's going to transcend and compete successfully with all the most advanced capitalist countries in the world. That is utopian stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Bolsheviks understood that. And Stalin, even 6 months before he elaborated the doctrine of socialism in one country, understood that and wrote it down on a piece of paper and was published as a pamphlet signed by him.
But just
finally, it was a sensible strategy. It made sense. They had to hold power for that to happen. And I think that the pivot where the Soviet Union, where the revolutionary opportunity is lost, is the defeat of the German Revolution, which is not the same as saying that, there were many germs in within the possibilities that the Russian Revolution represented.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about, the Russian Revolution died in Germany. Like, I think, you almost have to think of the Russian Revolution not as the Russian Revolution, but as part of a wider wave of worldwide revolutionary struggles. And, the idea was essentially starting the German Revolution in Russia. That was really how the Bolsheviks looked at it. And, our group very explicitly rejects socialism in one country or any kind of national road to socialism. Our general position is that, you need to have a worldwide, political organization of the working class before you can seize power. And you need to be able to have, worldwide political organization of the class. If you're going to, you can't just seize power in one small country and then hope that, you're going to be able to have an autarky or whatever. The revolution will have to be international or nothing. World communism really is like a core part of our vision. But I still think that you have to look at aspects of the Bolshevik strategy that were a result of the kind of peasant conditions that existed at that time that aren't really transferable to today. I think like I said, we can't just LARP the Russian Revolution. We need to look at what worked with the Bolsheviks that is applicable today. And what didn't work, and you can see the kind of the generation of the revolution before the explicit socialism in one country policy. Like, for example, you have the Comintern support of Turkish nationalists who ended up murdering communists in order to kind of defend Russia's national interest. And this happened before Stalin. You can see the roots of Stalinism and the roots of socialism in one country before Stalin fully consolidates power. And I think this is just something we have to be honest about. And it doesn't mean rejecting, completely rejecting Bolshevism, but it does mean that we do have to kind of very, carefully look at the what happened in Russia and when did things start going south, And primarily the blame is on, the failure of the German Revolution. That is really why, the revolution degenerated. But how it degenerated and the process through which it degenerated is, something you have to look at, I think.
Okay, so we're starting to get close on time, so I'm going to take two questions at a time. So, Tana and then Mike.
You mentioned that a lot of people in your group came together, or maybe a few people came together over Occupy, and that you were either politicized by Occupy or it put you in touch with like-minded people. I was wondering if you could discuss how your group explains the Occupy phenomenon and also its quick dissolution to members, and then if that's something, if Occupy style politics is something that you're often dealing with when you're speaking with young people, and how your group kind of digests that and
can we take Mike's question as well?
Yeah.
Let me
just
answer.
I guess the question, rank and file, it's an observation as much as a question. Yeah, the problem with it is it's actually conceptually the idea of a rank and file movement as being a solution to the problem is conceptually problematic. Mm-hmm. The reason why it's conceptually problematic is precisely the failure of the German Revolution, because the guys say, what we've got to do, we don't take Ebert Scheidemann, the trade union leaders, throw him in jail. We build up our own organisation independent. Okay, you build up your own organisation independent, but it's still the case that you need to take decisions on a national scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't taken Ebert Scheidemann and Co. and thrown them in jail, your own organisations then go and look at the people who've got a national organisation, which is Ebert Scheidemann and Co. Yeah, and the KAPD you take as a model precisely don't fail to learn that lesson. Yeah. And is therefore in a sense is part of the problem with the failure of the German Revolution. As a matter of practical politics, the British SWP for many, many years and still does argue for creating rank and file organisations. But the rank and file organisations quite inevitably turn out to be just fronts for the SWP, so that you're concealing the fact you're actually a bunch of communists.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is right there. That it's you want an organisation on a platform inside the trade unions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're concealing behind, and if you're a revolutionary syndicalist, you're concealing that you're a bunch of communists behind calling yourselves a trade union. That's the
mm-hmm.
the problem. It's a problem question rather than that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with you that it's a problem. It's, like I said, it's still something we're trying to work out. And I think what makes it more complicated today is just the lack of a powerful union movement in our state. And so it seems like, you know, if we were to form, you know, workplace organizations, we would want them to be as rank and file controlled as possible. But, you know, it is inevitable that at a certain scale you will get a bureaucracy. And so I think that is why you need to have a party organization that is based on unity of politics, not based on economic interest. And on the Occupy question, I think, I was already fairly politicized. You know, I was already kind of politicized before Occupy, and I think most of us were. And I think we kind of just met each other there when we showed up. And honestly, in Tampa, Occupy wasn't very, you know, it was mostly Ron Paul libertarians.
So you went there with an agenda?
We didn't go there with an agenda. I just showed up as an individual, basically. And you know, I talked to people and figured out who are, you know, the people here who actually, like, believe in class politics and aren't just a bunch of hippies, you know. And so we met each other through that, and we started talking and kind of developed a political friendships based on that. But as far as our critique of Occupy, well, you know, we're pretty critical of kind of movementist strategy, I guess, which is popular on the left, which is, you know, you just got to get people in the streets. It doesn't really matter what your ideology is. It doesn't really matter what your politics are, as long as people are in the streets and fighting and uniting. And I think Occupy for us showed how the weaknesses of that strategy and the weaknesses of kind of the movementist, I guess, strategy of just kind of, you know, having kind of like a vague populist platform, like 99% or 5%, and just kind of, you know, uniting people based on just this very vague populist kind of demands. And also the whole structure of Occupy, you know, kind of showed us that you need a more formal structure, I guess. That's, you know, like, we shouldn't be afraid of just doing majority vote, you know. You know, I think most of the lessons we learned from Occupy were negative, but overall we were glad to have been involved, and we were glad to have been there and, you know, have, you know, seen what was going on, and, you know, there were definitely lessons to have learned from it.
Okay. So we're going to take Gabe. Oh, you don't want to. Okay, so then it's going to be Sam and Josh in the back, and then, we'll have to just answer those questions, and then we'll be done.
And question askers, speak up because you have a microphone here.
My question is just about Florida, really, and how you conceive your group in terms of its context, the specificity of the situation in Florida. You've mentioned a few times, you know, the lack of unions there, more in the rest of this country. Also, sort of the character of Occupy there is a little specific, but I want to know what you think about Florida, sort of its ideological context, its also material context. I mean, what people do down there, recent economic history as you know it. What's the state of the class, I guess?
Well, like I said, there really is not much of a powerful union movement in Florida, and it is a very conservative state, I would say. But you do have kind of Latino immigrant communities and stuff that I think would be more open to radical politics than a lot of the more conservative sections. And in Tampa, in specific, you have a port. And that would maybe be, you know, a place where we could find people who are, you know, who have workplace struggles and whatnot that we could get involved in. But in Tampa, it is, you know, it's mostly service industry type stuff. I mean, I think the only example of the kind of economic class struggle that's going on there is the Fight for 15 campaign. That's pretty much it as far as now. I mean, there isn't really a strong class struggle culture in Tampa. You know, you don't have a lot of strikes and a lot of union activity. Fight for 15 is pretty much like the only thing we've had recently. And so, I guess that's, I mean, that is kind of one of the reasons we kind of are starting from scratch, just because the left in Florida is just so weak and non-existent. And, well, like I said, you know, we have actually found quite a bit of interest in our politics, you know, surprisingly, given how conservative and right-wing, you know, Florida is.
Okay. I want to ask, I'm sorry if you sort of already covered this in your initial remarks, I came in a bit late, but I want to sort of ask about a point of departure for not only you, but also for other members of your group. You said that you were already politicized going into, for instance, the Occupy moments. So, and also sort of this idea that a lot of what you find on the left today is sort of beholden to a new leftist sort of legacy, that you find there needs to be a sort of fresh or sort of like new generational experience with the questions of the history of communism and Marxism. So I want to ask about your initial politicization or that of your group. You know, what, first of all, what do you find, like, in terms of a younger generational context, what do you find are sort of like these political touchstones that need to be, or that are sort of politicizing for this new generation? And what was politicizing for you and your group?
I mean, my own politicization was basically around the time of the Iraq War. You know, I was growing up, you know, just, I didn't really know much about, I was, you know, I maybe like 14 years old when that happened. And when that went down, that kind of made me pay attention to politics and start paying attention to what was going on politically. And it made me, my initial politicization was basically through Noam Chomsky. And I think this is like a lot of people get into left politics through Noam Chomsky and anarcho-syndicalism. And that was, you know, that was basically my initial politicization, was just, you know, learning to hate America, basically, through reading Noam Chomsky. And, you know, just what was going on in the Middle East was very eye-opening to me, and kind of, you know, opened my eyes to broader politics. And when Occupy started up, I was actually not yet, you know, a self-describing Marxist. I was still kind of a, what I would describe as like a Chomskyan anarchist, basically. Like, I was starting to get interested in Marxism, and I was starting to fall into those politics more and more, but I was still pretty much, you know, an anarcho-syndicalist. And so, you know, maybe that's kind of why there's kind of a syndicalist deviationist in our group, because that's kind of where a lot of our politics started out, I guess. A lot of us started out as, you know, anarchists and readers of Chomsky. Some of us got into politics through, like, the Situationists. And some of us, you know, were just completely new until they knew the left-wing politics until they met us. But I guess that would answer your question.
Okay.
That's all we have time for. Thank you very much, Tom.
Quick announcement, the next workshops are happening. It's Social Party, room 620, Institute for Social Ecology, 3-1.